Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why Lakers fans will never fully embrace LeBron James.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why I love how Richard Sherman called out my Seahawks this weekend. Speak for yourself starts now. Well, you know, they're my Seahawks when they're winning. They're yours when they're losing.
What's the love? Sound like bitterness to me. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by Fox soccer analyst Ian Joy and the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's start in Russia, where France poured it on in the second half, beating Croatia 4-2 and taking home the World Cup for the second time. Despite the score, Croatia actually dominated the ball and had more shots than France, but they were also coming off three straight games with extra time. Ian, were you impressed with France or disappointed with Croatia?
I think it's a bit of both, Jason. I was really impressed with Croatia, first and foremost, the way they started this game. They really knocked the ball around well. They dominated in possession, created the better opportunities. But what impressed me most about the two teams was the efficiency from France.
Yeah.
I mean, Croatia had their chances to win this World Cup final, and France were the team that just made sure they took their chances when they arose.
One of the things that jumped out to me to the World Cup, and I really saw it from Croatia yesterday, was the effort. When the United States played Trinidad Tobago to qualify for the World Cup, it was almost passive. Croatia was relentless. Mm-hmm. Croatia, throughout this tournament, went in as an underdog. I was blown away by the World Cup, to me, seemed energized. Mm-hmm. You know, we ended up, Jason, with no Ronaldo at the end, no Brazil, no Argentina, no Messi, no England, no Mexico. Mm-hmm. I almost thought the World Cup would became bigger than the star players, which in the NBA we know isn't true. You need LeBron. You need Durant.
Disappointed with Croatia or impressed with France?
Blown away by France. They have the best player. Croatia blew me away in the tournament. Their energy, they were so physical.
They were brilliant.
Never intimidated.
They watched something different than me. I thought France was clearly more skilled than everybody and just blew through Croatia with efficiency and skill. Croatia may have dominated the ball, but not the game.
How often do we talk about this on the show? When you're the hunted, you're taking everybody's best punch. France came into the tournament as one of the big favorites, and they just basically steamrolled everyone. I mean, in the knockout rounds, no overtime, no penalty kicks. And here in this game, you know, Croatia ties it up, and France just steamrolls them, just blew them away in the second half. This team is and they're young, too. This isn't like a super veteran squad. This is a really impressive performance.
And I don't buy into the dynasty, though. Soccer's political. A lot happens in 4 years. You know, I'm sure they'll be great in 4 years. How many back-to-back World Cup championship teams have we had?
No, it's very difficult, and you make a great point. I think if you look over the last three World Cup champions, they've really struggled in the next major tournament, especially when it comes to the World Cup. But for France in particular, I do buy into this. I buy into what they are selling me right now. They've got an opportunity to not only compete at the next Euro Championship and win it. Jason's shaking his head, but I love it. They have a chance to win the next World Cup as well. So if you're a betting man, get to Vegas, put a couple $100 on France to win the next two major tournaments.
Listen,
because it could happen.
I wasn't shaking my head over that. I don't disagree with you. This team is so young and so talented that, yeah, I could see them extending this for a while and be like Brazil and with Pele and 58-62 and go back-to-back. I could see that happening. But anything can happen between now and the next World Cup.
You know, it's... I do think it was a great tournament. The energy, the scoring, the underdog stories, Russia, Iceland. But we had no Ronaldo at the end, no Messi at the end. United States didn't make it, no Mexico at the end, no Germany. I thought it lacked a little star power at the end.
It really did. I think you make a great point, though. It's not necessarily just about the major stars that we all hoped would be there when it comes to the Final Four teams or even the World Cup final. We expected it to be a Messi or a Cristiano Ronaldo there, but it didn't turn out to be that way. The World Cup was the winner. That was the superstar. It was so competitive. It's a real shame that a nation like the United States were not involved in this because they could have done serious damage in this competition. The big boys fell out early and the underdogs went all the way and made it so competitive. The World Cup, between the quality levels now and all of the nations, is getting smaller and smaller. Anyone can win it.
Yeah, the game wasn't without some controversy, with France's second goal coming on a penalty kick awarded by the video assistant ref, VAR, for a handball that wasn't called by the official on the field.
Yeah.
Now, after the match, Croatia's coach went off saying, quote, "You don't give a penalty like that in a World Cup final." Ian, did the ref get that call right?
I think it's a tough one to decide because we all have probably different opinions, and I'm sure the soccer nation has a different opinion on whether it was or was not a penalty kick. For me personally, I would not have given a penalty kick there, but I can understand why. His hand clearly moved in the direction of the ball. Yep. I don't think it was intentional. The referee had the opportunity to use video review, which has been tremendous in this tournament, to look at it over and over and over again. And had he got that opportunity to look at it first time around, he made his choice. He's decided, okay, I maybe missed this call. I've got it second time around because I've had a second look at it. How can you disagree with the referee? That's his opinion.
But
that's
the stage is so big for that call. Like, you know, we've all watched the NBA in our lives. You swallow the whistle with 2 minutes left.
But why should he swallow it just because it's a World Cup final?
Because it was
so
close. His
opinion should be, hey, this is a game. This is a match. It doesn't matter if it's the World Cup final or the first game in the qualifiers. He's got to make that call on his choice.
Kyler, it's in the first half, and to me, the burden is on the player. This was off a set piece, right? Why weren't his hands behind his back? He should have been over the top careful in that situation. That's why I don't question the referee at all.
It feels like they got this right, Ian. I mean, it didn't seem like a natural move to have your hand out toward the goal as if you're blocking it. And what I loved about this review was it was a bang-bang review. He goes over to the booth, done in 2 minutes. Yeah. We complain about the NFL and NBA take forever. It slows down the game. I thought this was a great call. I thought it was a right call.
Mike, I can't disagree with you because it can go 50-50. It's your choice against my choice. But with you, Jason, how many people do you see jumping with their arms behind their back? They just naturally don't do it. Naturally, your arms have to be able to utilize your body to get up in the air. I can understand why his arms were there. It's just that last bit of movement that is making it 50-50 for me. So I'm happy the referee had video review to be able to rely on in a match like this to get the call right. He believes he got it right. I support him.
Overall, you think video review was a success in this World Cup?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is fantastic to have. We've watched this in American sports already, how important it is to get the decision right in big games when it matters most. And even though you have video review, the decision can still be controversial like it was yesterday in a World Cup final. I love it's there. I love the fact the referees have support.
Kyler, we do have this video review debate all the time about the NFL and Major League Baseball. Did you like it? This is the first time I think they've used it in a World Cup.
I've always said this. Why doesn't anybody call pass interference on a Hail Mary? Because the world changes. On plays of that significance, I do think I've covered boxing matches in Vegas where you get to the last 25, 30 seconds of a fight, you don't call it. You just let a boxer stay in the corner if he's getting beaten. Even if it gets to a point where you're on the precipice of being dangerous, you just let the fight go. I do think in stages of importance, you do officiate differently. I do.
So do you think it was a penalty?
I don't think I could have called it a penalty.
See, I mean, you both disagree, and it's hard to agree or disagree.
Wait, with you. Boxing ring, basketball court, football field, those are all confined spaces. This is one referee for a massive amount of space. I mean, I love the video review in soccer. I
will say this. Their review system is more efficient than ours. That part I like.
That ain't saying a whole lot. All right, let's move to France's rising star, 19-year-old Mbappe, whose goal in the 66th minute made him the youngest to score in a World Cup final since Pele. While Mbappe is already a star in Europe, this tournament has brought him to the attention of the world. Ian, is he the next global superstar in soccer?
Yeah, he's not the next one. He already is the global superstar because this tournament provided him that platform, and it has done for many generations. The World Cup is the main stage where if you are a superstar in soccer, you have to be able to turn it on. We were crying out when Messi disappeared, when Cristiano Ronaldo disappeared, and Chicharito for the Mexican national team, whoever the superstars were, they all fell by the wayside. This kid took his game and his superstardom to the next level. Not only did he showcase what he has as a potential superstar going forward on the field and winning trophies, he showed us that his celebrations are awesome, he's got style, he is what kids should be looking up to, and he's a great boy. He's got a great attitude.
Obviously, he's got tremendous burst. What else blows you away with him?
Well, it's not just his pace that blows me away. It's the fact that he has such close control of the ball. I mean, the goal he scored against, or I think it was a penalty kick he won against Argentina, where he blew past four or five players, was his speed that caught everybody's attention, first and foremost. But he had such close control of the ball. I mean, this is a guy you cannot defend against. You have to give yourself a 10-yard head start to be able to catch him, and you also have to be careful in your timing when you get close to this kid. I think he is one of a kind. I just don't think we've seen a player like him for a very long time.
Colin, what I find interesting is the moment for a 19-year-old kid wasn't too big for him. He's obviously got more talent than Freddie Adu, but we've seen American kids fold under the moment gets too big and they're not the same. And that's where I wonder, Ian, and anybody here at the desk, will he be able to sustain it? Because now that you're an international superstar, the pressure, the celebrity, the distractions, all of that comes to fruition and to the table at a level unprecedented right now because of social media and everything. Will he be able to handle being a child superstar, I think, is the question.
That's something we can only hope for because, listen, when the World Cup's here in 2026, this kid's going to be 27 years old. In his prime. That's crazy. I was watching the game with my young kids yesterday. I said early, guys, if Mbappe scores, I will get you jerseys. And we had to order them in the second half. Like, my kids were so into this. I do believe he's going to be as big as Ronaldo and Messi. When you can do this at the World Cup, Ian.
Yeah.
Assuming he can keep up the pace, you know, in club soccer, I'm hopeful that this guy can be the next big global star.
Well, but a lot of people who don't realize already who are just really catching a drift of soccer because of the World Cup, which is why I love it so much. People who are not familiar with soccer are learning about the game throughout this tournament. They probably never heard of Mbappe before. But for people who work inside the game and supporters of the beautiful game, they recognize this kid has had potential for the last 2 years playing at the highest level. He moved for hundreds of millions of dollars already to Paris Saint-Germain. So the potential was certainly there. He already turned it on for PSG in their domestic league and in the Champions League. So there's no doubt in my mind when it comes to the next, two, three World Cups, this guy will be there.
Is he in France's biggest league?
He's in France's biggest league right now, but I think it'll be very difficult for the French league to keep a hold of this guy.
That's what I'm saying. So will he become Ronaldo? Would he move to the English Premier League, which is the most moneyed league? Will he be a target of a Liverpool, of a Man U?
He's a target for every single club team right now in the game. I think the league that suits him best might not be the Premier League. I think you might see him go to a Real Madrid who just lost their superstar, your beloved Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
They need the next superstar playing in a white jersey. So that would be the move that makes most sense to me.
But EPL is the richest league.
EPL is by far
the richest league. They can spend the most money.
They can, but they have to be careful of financial fair play. So you have to spend your money wisely.
Kyle, let me drag you to your favorite topic. This kid at 19 is the LeBron James of soccer.
No question.
And probably ahead of LeBron James at 19. And that, again, what we marvel at, and even though I nitpick it a little bit, LeBron was able to handle the fame. And that's, again, where I think that's going to be the test for Mbappe.
Well, you said he was a great kid.
Fantastic kid.
Yeah. I think there's almost a DNA. You know, LeBron was saved by a young basketball coach early in his career, and he had great leadership. France, does he have the right leadership, the right coaching, the right people around him for what you say he does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you look at big stars like LeBron, you've already just mentioned there, and there is other superstars who were good or great as kids that have failed to make the grade. I think mental strength comes into play.
Yeah.
How mature are they when they're young kids? LeBron was way more mature than most other kids who played at his age group. This kid, you can see, is a little raw and he's a little young, but soccer is becoming a younger man's game.
Yeah.
No longer is your potential and peak form at 27 to 30 years old. It's now 22 to 25 years old that the hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on these kids. I think he's got the mental strength. I think he has the best attitude you could potentially see. And right now he's in a market where everybody wants the next superstar. Social media comes into play, promotional advertisement, whatever it is, the dollars are already being spent on this kid because he's a star.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by a couple of longtime NFL players, Mark Schlereth, T.J. Hushmanzada. Let's move to the National Football League, where one Hall of Fame receiver is going after another. Michael Irvin saying he backs the Hall of Fame's decision not to individually recognize T.O. during this year's induction ceremony. But Owens now says his boycott isn't about him. It's about others that the Hall has snubbed, like Jerry Kramer, who will finally be inducted after waiting 45 years. As T.O. tweeted, "I'm so happy for Jerry. You shouldn't have to wait that damn long either. I'm doing this for guys like him, past, present, future." Whitlock, you think T.O.'s being sincere?
I think he's being 100% sincere. I think in T.O.'s mind, he is He's complaining for himself, but he's also complaining for others. And so he's 1,000% sincere. He's also 1,000% wrong in terms of, I think too many guys are getting into the Hall of Fame. Too many guys feel entitled to get into the Hall of Fame. We've seen it. I hate to call any names, but I will, just being honest. Harry Carson for the Giants was all upset because he kept not getting in. And then he told them to take his name off the ballot. And I wish they had, because Harry Carson's not a Hall of Fame linebacker. He's in. You know, I hate to criticize any Hall of Famer because I love the NFL Hall of Fame or the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But too many guys are getting in. The thing that makes the Hall of Fame great is that it's hard to get in and people get snubbed. That's what makes it such an accomplishment.
I'm supposed to believe that T.O. deeply cared about Jerry Kramer months ago?
Not Jerry Kramer, but guys that he feels have been wronged and should get in the Hall of Fame
earlier. When has T.O. ever shown me that he's anything other than selfish? When has he cared about others?
Oh.
You're going off brand.
No. And T.O., I'm talking about T.O.'s mind. This is no different than, and I don't want to take us down this path, no one follow in, but it's just like Colin Kaepernick believes the BS he's selling. He thinks he's doing it to help other people and the police brutality discussion, but he's not. T.O. thinks he's doing this to help other guys that have been snubbed. I think he sincerely believes that.
I want to know how many guys called him up to appoint him the guy who rectifies the Hall of Fame. You're a Hall of Famer or you're not a Hall of Famer. And I don't care if you go in the first ballot. I don't care if you go in like Jerry Kramer 45 years later. The guy's a Hall of Fame player, one of the best. And I will tell you this, as a former player, I think that you take your career in totality. Now, it's not, you know, it's not a rating on what kind of guy you were or the community service you did and all those different things. But if you were historically considered to be a bad teammate that went from place to place to place, and blew up every place he ever went to, I think you have to take that as a voter, or many of the voters take that into consideration.
I get that.
That's part of, there's the tangible stuff, the numbers, no question, first ballot Hall of Famer, no question. Then there's the intangible stuff, can't stay with one team, blows every team that he's on up at some point, and didn't win any championships. And now, championships are a team accomplishment, but there is
they
that
do
unselfish.
Elevate you.
Yeah, and that's just the way the Hall of Fame vote works.
So I got to disagree, obviously. It's.
You don't think he's being sincere?
No, I think he's being sincere. T.O. hasn't shown us that he speaks his mind. He's not going to lie about anything. So when he says he's doing it for everybody else, I believe he's trying to set a precedent for guys that don't get in on the first ballot that feel they should. It's okay not to go because I'm doing it. He's being the trailblazer, number one.
I wouldn't want to blaze that trail, but continue. But, you're right.
See, the thing
that's not
is,
the trail I want to blaze.
But with T.O., yeah. There's 27 receivers in the Hall of Fame, 6 of them first ballot. He's one of the top 3 receivers to ever play. He should have gotten in on the first ballot. And because he didn't, he's going to show you, I'm pissed off, I'm not showing up. I don't see it as a big deal because this is his preference. This is his career. When he looks back 10, 15, 20 years from now, is he going to say, man, I wish I would have gone? It's too, you can't go back and play that.
I think Michael Irvin made the greatest point on all of this, is that what T.O.'s not thinking about is the guys coming in behind him. And so there will be Hall of Fame voters that will say, man, we got burned by Terrell Owens. And this person reminds me of Terrell Owens. And so, therefore, let's not put him in.
You go to what Mark was saying is, he was a bad teammate. And this topic, dude, there's people in the Hall of Fame that have killed people. There's people in the Hall of Fame that have been charged with sexual assault. So that's a lot worse than being a bad teammate. But they're in the Hall of Fame.
It's a great talking point. But O.J. Simpson got into the Hall of Fame long before Brentwood. And so
there's other people as well.
I understand. But, again, they're being
that got in after.
I'm at a loss for right now, but I think it's a good talking point, but I just don't think it holds true. I can't blame Hall of Fame voters for putting O.J. Simpson in the Hall of Fame. No one could predict that that's where he would end up and the type of person he would be. Terrell Owens, just from a football perspective, is what Mark's talking about and what I've been talking about from the very beginning. Great player, bad teammate. And being a good teammate is a part of how you should evaluate people as it relates to going into the Hall of Fame.
TJ, could I make this argument, though, is that like the Baseball Hall of Fame, Tom Seaver, nobody's ever been unanimous. Tom Seaver, I think, was really, really close. And that they do take totality of your, you know, how many teams, good leader, good clubhouse guy. And so a lot of guys will get into the Hall of Fame like a Jeter, but he'll be much lower rated than a Tom Seaver. That you have to consider everything. Because football is the ultimate choreographed sport. If you jump offside, you ruin it for 10 people.
Yes.
That in basketball, it's a little different. But it's not choreographed as much. You could miss a screen and you can still dunk over.
Football is the ultimate team sport.
Okay,
ultimate.
So couldn't I argue to Mark's point is, you do have to consider, not a great teammate, hurt some teams, called out people, wasn't always a great sport, had a Sharpie in his sock. That should ding him a little. A little. It is part of the team, right?
Yeah, out of the 48 guys that voted, you need 39 votes to get in. Ding him a little. 45 voting yes. That's what should have happened. And I'm not saying I agree with him. I'm not going to go into the Hall of Fame. And I wasn't a kid growing up that wanted to be in the Hall of Fame. I played 1 year of football before I got to college, so that wasn't my goal. Oh, I want to be in the Hall of Fame. I never saw it that way. But I know, when we discussed this last week, my generation of receivers, they all wanted to emulate and be like T.O. I mean, that's just the reality of it. If you wanted to celebrate, you wanted to do everything that T.O. did.
Right. Well, my whole thing with T.O. is there is no right way to do something wrong. And if you are not a good teammate, you're going to be voted in the Hall of Fame. That's, you know, going into it, the way, the criteria that they judge people on. And that's part of your legacy. It's part of what you were as a player. And so you can't say, hey, just look at the good stuff I did and don't look at this over here, right? Now we're playing Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. You know, everything's going to be fine here. You can't separate those things. It's in totality, and that's the way the judgment goes.
Well,
can I ask you guys a question?
What? Yeah.
Do you think anybody else will do this moving forward in the future?
Yeah.
Sit at home and not go to the ceremony? No, I don't think anybody will do that ever, because T.O.'s a unique case. I don't think it's ever going to happen again. Look, man, for me, I did, as a kid, grow up dreaming about being in the Hall of Fame. I used to lay on my living room floor and repeat my speech to my mother as a kid. So to see somebody do this blows my mind. And to see him do it and take the attention away, man, I'm a huge Ray Lewis fan. Huge. And to see anything distract from Ray Lewis getting into the Hall of Fame, bothers me, man.
But
just as a football
Ray fan. Lewis' speech is gonna be so well thought out and with so much energy that you won't talk about T.O. because you know he's gonna bring a lot of passion and a lot of energy when he gives his speech.
All right, welcome back. Mark Schlereth and T.J. Housmanjada are back. Let's move to Seattle, where just a few years ago, the Seahawks looked poised to become a dynasty after back-to-back Super Bowl appearances, but they have since unraveled with their vaunted Legion of Boom defense decimated by trades and injuries. Now one of the leaders of that D, Richard Sherman, has tried to explain the collapse, telling Sports Illustrated, quote, "Mistakes and poor judgment on things ruin what could have been a really special deal. You have the two best linebackers in the game. You have the quarterback. You have a great wide receiver in Doug Baldwin, and you're paying Dwayne Brown. They've lost their way. It's as simple as that." Cowherd, got an issue with Sherman calling out the Seahawks?
No, he's outspoken, and you knew that when you let him go. And he's going to talk. And I think he's right. I've been saying this for a year with Pete Carroll.
Lost their way?
Oh, I absolutely believe it. Absolutely believe it. They've made mistakes. By the way, when Pete first came into the league and had played college, coached college football, those first three drafts, he stole players. They have made a lot of mistakes. In fact, I thought their last draft was their weakest. So I think they have lost their way. Now, I will say this. I also think that Pete enabled strong, smart voices like Richard Sherman. And I think it's come back to bite the Seahawks. They're too volatile. They're too emotional. Football is a game of choreography and efficiency, not volatility. Wild, loud political locker rooms can unravel, and I think over time they have.
I think you're hearing it differently than me. When I hear lost their way, that's a 2017 statement. If in 2017, Richard Sherman, hey, we lost our way, I get it. They're in the process of trying to find a new way. And Richard Sherman sounds bitter that they've moved on from him, who was a part of them losing their way. the players got too powerful and they've had to run out the defensive side of the football of all the mouthy guys who wouldn't allow Pete Carroll and the coaching staff to actually coach. So I think this is a part of a process of them finding a new way and finding their way. Again, if Sherman had said this last year, I'm right on board with him. But now, lost their way? No, they're doing what teams and the world requires. You got to move on and evolve.
What the Seahawks did was they amassed some of the best defensive talent that I've ever watched play football in the last decade. You talk about their corners, and they were one of the first teams that really built their team upside down defensively, meaning that they invested their money in the back end of that defense. Those corners and the safeties and the linebackers were phenomenal. They had good defensive linemen as well, but they really were one of the first teams to build it upside down, play three corners, jam you at the line of scrimmage, play a basic matchup zone, and just say, you can't beat us in the back end. And so many teams, the Broncos followed suit, a bunch of teams, the Giants have followed suit, a lot of teams have followed suit. So they had this formulaic plan on the defensive side of the ball. They were cutting edge. You know what happened? You had to pay all those guys. And then all of a sudden, your rookie quarterback, who was great, that was costing you $400,000 a year, eventually you had to pay that guy.
Dallas and Dak are going to get into that.
Right, and that's what ends up happening to football teams. You chose not to pay anybody up front on your offensive line. It's been a debacle. I called the Seahawks game 2 years ago on radio, and they had three guys starting the offensive line, three guys starting that shouldn't have been backups in the league, and the next year none of those guys were on the team. And then they fire their offensive line coach because you can't make a bunch of defensive linemen, offensive linemen. I mean, that's the philosophy
that's
they went through.
Way.
So you want to talk about losing your way. What's happened is the evolution of, we can't continue to pay everybody on the defensive side. We got to pay our quarterback, and now we got to figure out how we're going to have some balance. So they're trying to, I don't know about losing your way, but you're trying to find your way in kind of a new system.
You talk about what you just said with the offensive linemen, and to answer Richard's question, that's why they paid Dwayne Brown, because they had converted defensive linemen playing offensive line. The Seahawks early on, they hit the jackpot with some draft picks, with drafting Richard Sherman late. They got Cam Chancellor was there the year prior. They got
A.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner.
Those guys later in the draft. Russell Wilson later in the draft.
They weren't paying him anything.
They had two first-round picks with Earl Thomas and Russell Okung together the same year. So they kind of hit the jackpot for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's what you said. When you got guys that are outspoken, that speak their mind, as they get a little older, they're really going to speak their mind because they've heard every story that Pete Carroll can tell. And now it starts to get old, so now he has to, it's the college system. 4 years, get you guys out of here, let's bring in another set of guys so I can tell these same stories again, and it's not regurgitated, it's not a recycled story. When I was there, Lindell White, we sit in the meeting room, Pete Carroll is telling a story. Lindell White finishes a story for him. Finishes a story for him and was like, I've heard all the stories he can tell at SC. And so he has to get rid of these guys. And it's a college mentality. Just bring these young guys in, they'll buy into my system, and watch. If he stays in the NFL 4, 5, 6 years, whoever's the best players on that team, they'll get rid of those guys as well.
All right, to Pittsburgh, where despite Mike Tomlin's optimism over the weekend, Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers failed to come to terms on a contract extension by today's deadline, means Bell is likely to continue his holdout. Adam Schefter reports Bell could sit out half the year. And Le'Veon himself implied that his time in Pittsburgh could be coming to an end, tweeting, quote, to all my Steeler fans, my desire always has been to retire a Steeler. Both sides worked extremely hard today to make it happen, but NFL's a hard biz at times. To the fans that had hope, I'm sorry we let you down, but trust me, 2018 will be my best season to date. His agent also chimed in, adding, quote, his intention was to retire a Steeler, but now that there's no deal, the practical reality is that this now likely will be his last season as a Steeler. Whitlock, will this be Le'Veon Bell's last year in Pittsburgh?
I think so, because I just don't think you can keep going back to this negotiating table with neither side satisfied and then continue the relationship. I think for Le'Veon Bell to get what he feels he deserves, and I don't blame him. He should be in charge of what he thinks his value is and stick to those principles. I do believe this is his last year in Pittsburgh. I think
when he shows up to camp, when he shows up to play, he's going to play at a high level, and it's going to be all about getting the hell out of there next season and going to the highest bidder.
This is really complex. He led the NFL in carries. We all know what happens to running backs who carry the ball that many times. He's 26, so he's got about three more peak years. He knows that. His agent knows that. But the Steelers have world-class receivers, a Hall of Fame quarterback. They draft well on the offensive side of the ball. They have a veteran head coach. They have two Pro Bowlers in the offensive line, and they're like, yeah, we got a lot of weapons. This is one of the hard ones. I totally get where Le'Veon Bell's coming from. But I would say this. I know players don't like the franchise tag, but in the last couple of years, he's made about $25 million. That is easily the most of any running back. Now, it's not like he's the 32nd. Like, Aaron Rodgers right now is wildly underpaid. Le'Veon's very well compensated. He's arguably the best back. I would say Todd Gurley, and then probably him. But I don't think this is easy. I think this is it's public. It's complex. I get both sides. But the one thing I'd side with the Steelers is, hey, this franchise tag was designed in the short term for teams worried about health. By the way, he's had some issues. The Steelers are right to say, listen,
hell
man.
Of a player, man. Yeah.
Oh, no. He is a great player. But he's not without some baggage. And we're going to make you the highest paid back, but you come with some baggage.
I think here's my biggest issue. And I understand how the running back position has been devalued. And it's been devalued because of injury issues, as you mentioned. But I think the bigger thing for me is that you look at the college system. The college system is having a tough time producing quarterbacks at a high level, having a tough time producing offensive linemen. I think the transition at the receiver position is pretty steep at times. We've seen a lot of guys that drafted very high that have a couple of years of transition into that. I think the running back position is one where, hey, a pitch is a pitch, zone is a zone. And we've seen first-rounders in Ezekiel Elliott have great success right off the bat. David Johnson with Arizona, success right off the bat.
Alvin Kamara
right off the bat. What was he, third or fourth rounder? Hunt in Kansas City.
That's a good point.
Right off the bat. Like, we're seeing a lot of running backs come right into the league and going, guy's pretty good right off the bat. And we're like, are we going to really invest this much money in a position
That's a good point.
Gets hurt all the time?
Man, Le'Veon Bell is a monster.
Now, he's a freak show now.
He's a monster. He'll get out there and catch the ball like a receiver. He'll run a route like a receiver, but he's a running back. If the Steelers don't feel he's worth what he's asking for, take the franchise tag off of him and see what he's worth on the open market. I believe this will be his last year in Pittsburgh, because if they couldn't come to a deal in the last 2 years franchising him, somebody is going to give him what he wants on the open market. Me personally, I love football. I watch football. Every game that comes on, I'm watching it. Le'Veon Bell is an absolute monster. He's good. He's quick. He's quick in space. He'll run you over. He'll outrun you. You can flank him out. He had 80-something catches last year.
You know what? I've never seen.
And he's 26.
And I played a long time, and I've been a part of the media now for 18 years. I have never seen a more patient running back and a guy that was able to set up his blocks better. Like, he is an offensive lineman's dream.
You have guys mimicking the way he runs the ball, and he's only 26 years old.
But again, like I said, I think the NFL looks at it like, yeah, but you're a running back.
You made a hell of a point, because I think about how good I think David Johnson is when he's healthy and on the field. Mm-hmm. But I, in terms of, and you know, fans buy tickets regardless, but in terms of a running back that I just like would pay money to go see play, there's really only been two in my lifetime, Barry Sanders and this dude, where their running styles are so unique and so exciting to me that it's worth the price
One of two players I got up off the bench twice in my career. I'm a big, fat offensive lineman to watch the other offense play. One was to watch Barry Sanders run the ball. As soon as we got done with our sideline meeting, I'm up because I want to see him. The other guy was Joe Montana. He just made it look so simple.
It'll be interesting if he holds out any games, how the Steelers look offensively, how their
Remember
run
when
game
he,
is.
He was out for the first couple of weeks, and D'Angelo Williams was leading the league.
He did well.
See, that's what I wonder. Not only is there's no scarcity at running back, secondly, he got a lot of weapons. Welcome back. We're joined now by NBA champ Dante Jones, founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. We moved to LeBron James.
showed up to the Lakers Summer League game over the weekend. I was just fascinated with the video. It's ridiculous. I just watched it over and over and over. Guy in shorts. Showing some team spirit, purple and gold, but that might not be enough to overcome some Laker fans' hesitation about embracing the king. New York Times explains, quote, a strange phenomena is playing out with a subsection of Lakerland. As hardcore fans of Kobe Bryant cope with a new and apparently uncomfortable reality, James, their longtime nemesis, is suddenly the face of the franchise. Whitlock, you think Laker fans will ever fully embrace LeBron?
No, and I don't think so because there's... Look, he and Kobe were rivals. And I think Laker fans, a significant portion of them, bought into that rivalry. And so show me when a great player has ever, toward the tail end of his career, moved to a team that saw him as a rival and gets fully embraced. I think he's going to be held to Kobe's standards of he needs to deliver multiple championships, and he's not going to do it. And I think that Kobe fans and Laker fans aren't going to be satisfied with these diminished expectations that some people like Cowherd are selling in the media of, oh, if they just win 15 extra regular season games, that's success. Laker fans ain't going for that. And they're offended that anybody's even selling that. It's causing hostility towards LeBron. They want LeBron to show up here determined to win championships. This ain't going back to Cleveland and let's just give you one championship and everybody throw a parade and call me a god. You come to the Lakers, it's about multiple championships when you're the best player in the league.
Yeah, Cleveland was burning his jerseys. And then 4 years later, they were begging him to come. And then 4 years later, they were begging him not to leave. It's amazing what LeBron does. He changes, he rewires your brain. I hate that guy. Oh, he's ours? Listen, T.O. and Eagle hate him. T.O. a cowboy, hour later, he's ours. You know how fans are. LeBron's going to go down the lane, throw it down a tomahawk, and the whole city's going to be like, yeah, I love LeBron.
It better be in the NBA Finals. Because if you're just talking about a regular season game, yeah, that's going to be nice. But this is a title town, man.
It hasn't been for a long time.
When it comes to Lakers, it's about titles.
It happens all the time with sports fans. We see the Knicks fans when Porzingis get drafted, and boo, we don't want him. And now he's the unicorn. He's the most famous man in New York City right now. Fans don't know what they want until they get it. No, what I'm saying is I'm giving you an example where fans don't know what they want until they get it, until they have success on the court. And when LeBron James produces like he's always done, I'm not guessing that he's going to produce. He's always produced wherever he's going. When he does that for the fans and give them the excitement and gives them the wins and puts them even close to a championship, they'll fall in love with him and it won't be a problem.
How's Miami and Cleveland right now?
This is L.A., man. This is the Lakers. Don't they got 18 titles?
But the Lakers have been without for a minute. So now once they start winning and being in a hunt to even get into the playoffs, it changes your perception.
Let's say Holly Berry goes a few months without dating. Do you think she then lowers her standards?
Yes.
No. No, she doesn't.
Yes, she does. Have you seen some of her new boyfriends? No. I might have a shot.
You got a shot.
I might have one.
Listen, guys, I have some problems with this fundamental problems with this New York Times piece. They went to a summer league game and interviewed a dozen fans. And now there's a big Kobe-LeBron divide among Lakers fans? Did you see the Blaze Pizza video last week? How many fans showed up in a pizza joint to worship LeBron? Meanwhile, a dozen fans wearing Kobe jerseys in Vegas, that's representative. This is just a bad job of journalism. There is no divide whatsoever, Whitlock. I mean, listen, I've been a Jets fan forever. If Tom Brady, rival of the Patriots, was available, and he can come to the Jets. They will take him in a heartbeat.
Do you not understand what we're saying? And again, just because you scream it don't make it right. Do you not understand the difference between the Jets and the Lakers? 18 titles versus one Super Bowl. What people's expectations. Happiness is all contingent on expectations. And the expectations for LeBron are already enormous. You match it with the enormous expectations of Laker fans when you got Jack Nicholson and all these superstars sitting courtside in front row. It's titles here. And they're not. LeBron is used to going to Cleveland or Miami and, oh my God, he's here and I can't believe it.
So you really believe here in LA, that's not the standard. So you really think Lakers fans expect to go from 35 wins and no playoffs to title because they got LeBron immediately? That's not how life works.
They were patient when Kobe had his down.
But again, if I had said the word immediately, I would understand you holding me to that standard. Okay. My position last week and this week, LeBron James, in order to have this be successful, he needs to win multiple titles here. He signed a 3 or 4 year contract. He's supposed to be here for 4 years. I'm saying he needs to win 2 titles. I'm not, when it happens, could be the last 2 years, could be the first 2 years, could be any time.
So you believe no embrace until the 2 titles come?
Yeah, I think he's going to be held to a standard. I believe if you talk to Lakers fans, many of them, and particularly the Kobe fans, they're like, they're happy LeBron's here, but they got to wait and see.
All Lakers fans are Kobe fans, first and foremost. And do you think when the playoffs start next year and the Lakers are in the hunt and the Lakers are making the playoffs and game one where you have a Laker building that's ecstatic just to be here, do you think there'll be boos there for LeBron James?
Boos? No. No one said boos.
No, that was just a question. I know you didn't say it, but do you think they will turn on this man who's bringing them closer to what they want?
I didn't say turn on this man. The question is about fully embrace LeBron. And no, until he wins 2 titles, he will not be fully embraced here. There will be people that will be skeptical of what his motivations are. Is the guy here just feeding us leftovers? Is he really about a title? Is it really about Leonardo DiCaprio Al Pacino and all the off-the-court things? There will be that skepticism. I get everybody else is selling LeBron and he's the greatest thing in the world. I just don't think Laker fans are right there with you.
It's always about a title. It's always about a title.
By the way, LeBron is the human iPhone. You never thought you'd need it. Then when you have it, you can't live without it. And they're going to go 3 years of great basketball and they're going to be like,
please don't retire.
Please don't leave.
One more year.
Brandon Ingram will be out in Portland. Kuzma will be on the bench.
I would totally understand where y'all coming from. They've had Kareem. They've had Wilt. They've had Shaq. They've had Kobe. They've had Magic. This isn't their first rodeo.
Guess what? None of their young millennial fans care. This is L.A.
About none of them.
L.A. doesn't care Burt Lancaster and Jack Nicholson.
Hold for 1 second. How many of these millennials do you think own season tickets?
Millennials control the messaging in America, and they're all into LeBron.
The guys who live at home, they do not have season tickets.
You just dodged the question.
What?
The people in that arena.
Yeah.
That particularly have season tickets and the hardcore Laker fans, they've been following this team for a lot longer than these millennials who are sitting at home on a laptop.
Did you see that standing O yesterday in Vegas? Those were the Kobe fans.
What a sacrifice LeBron made. He's so obsessed. He went to Las Vegas. Oh, my God.
How many times
He went to Las Vegas.
That arena is going to erupt his first game as a Laker.
He went to Las Vegas.
It's the middle of the
desert.
He's
obsessed.
Very hard to find.
Yes, very hard to get. No one goes to Las Vegas.
All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Let's move to Wimbledon, where Serena Williams came up short at the final on Saturday, less than a year removed from giving birth and almost dying from postpartum blood clots. Regardless, before the match, NBC called Serena the greatest athlete of all time. Coward, do you agree?
Well, no, I don't think she beat Roger Federer if they played. I think she's the greatest female tennis player ever. That's awesome.
Most dominant.
Most dominant.
I think she's the Wilt Chamberlain of tennis in terms of just an unbelievable dominant athlete that they've never seen before.